everyone, and welcome to Let's Jaws for a Minute, the podcast that took a deep dive into Steven Spielberg's 1975 masterpiece and is now setting sail into uncharted waters to discover the world beyond Jaws. I'm Sarah Buddery.
And I'm MJ Smith, and this week is our second entry in our Monster Movies season, and boy, do we got a doozy. Quite literally, I think most people would call it the king of all monster movies, not just because of the name. But we're talking about 1933's King Kong, which, you know, it's King Kong. And the plot is a film crew goes to a tropical island for a location shoot where they capture a colossal ape who takes a shine to their blonde starlet and bring him back to New York City. Directed by Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Shostak, starring Faye Ray, Robert Armstrong, and Bruce Cabot. I watched it digitally. I'm pretty sure it's available most places here in the States. I happen to own it in my digital movies collection. I somehow don't own a physical copy of this of this movie, but I have it like a, you know, 1080p or whatever digital copy of it in my like Movies Anywhere library. Yeah, it's not available to stream anywhere here in the States, but you can rent it on all the rentable platforms for like $3. So that's how I saw it, and you can see it on any of the platforms you digitally rent films on. Where did you see it, Sarah?
We had the DVD of it, quite an old copy, but it is actually, at time of recording this at least, so if it's gone by the time this goes out, don't get angry with me. It's currently on BBC iPlayer to stream free. Over here, so no excuse not to watch it when it's available literally for free at the moment. Is available to rent on Apple, Amazon, Google, YouTube, all the usual places. But do they, we were saying off mic that they don't have a Criterion release of this, but do they have a Blu-ray release of it? Or
there is a Blu-ray release, but I think it's pretty basic. Like, there's not like a special edition thing for it that I was able to track down, which is really surprising given how influential this movie is. Like, it needs something.
Yeah,
I think
it deserves it for sure. Yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't had a Criterion. It would, like, I would love. The thing is, they could do the Godzilla treatment with the Criterion for this and put in like a bunch of different King Kong movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and just have it as a whole set.
Yeah,
that would be cool. But
that would be neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was this a first time watch for you?
It certainly was.
What? That's wild. This is a movie I grew up with, so that's wild to me.
Yeah. It's much like quite a lot of Frankenstein. It's just is one of those stories that is so familiar to me. It was like, well, of course I've seen it. I must have seen it. I'm so familiar with this story. I've seen other versions of King Kong, of which there are many.
Yes.
Declining in quality from the 30s, shall we say. They peaked and made the best one in 33, so they should have just stopped then.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those stories that it's just like everyone knows this. There's certain, particularly with a lot of like the classic monster movies, everyone knows the story of Dracula, everyone knows the story of Frankenstein. Like, there's these just these classic stories that have been done to death so many times that everyone is just familiar with it, regardless of whether they've actually seen this particular version or not. So of course I've seen the kind of climactic moment in this film with him swatting away the planes on the top of the Empire State Building. I'd seen bits of it, and sort of particularly the effects of the King Kong himself, I sort of seen clips of, but this was the first time actually like sitting down properly watching it. And my kind of main reference point for King Kong, like prior to this, or the film that I can sort of like remember the most, is the Peter Jackson version. And my main gripe with that film, I have many gripes with that film, but my main one is how pissing long it takes them to get to the island. I'm all for build-up, because let's be clear, it is 40 minutes into this film before we see the main man himself. And it is, by IMDb's count, an hour 40. It was, it said an hour 35 on the DVD that I watched, but what's 5 minutes hour, months, friends?
It was mine's an hour 44, my digital copy.
So short. And like, for it to be four, like we said the same with Frankenstein, that was a good 30 minutes into the film before you see the creature himself. This is 40 minutes into the film before we see the monster, and that is fine. This is something we mentioned on our Blob episode, which was a Patreon exclusive. You have to feel the presence of the monster if you're not going to see it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they are like, the film crew are heading to this island, they don't know what they're going to find there. As soon as they start getting close to that island, and it's called Skull Island, I mean, come on, like, it's, you know, there's hints that something is gonna happen over there that's, mm-hmm. you know, potentially gonna be exciting and thrilling. And the build up to that as well, these huge gates that they find on the island, and there is something behind that, but we don't know what it was. You feel the presence of Kong long before you see him. So then it makes that moment when you actually do see him for the first time just like completely take your breath away, because it's just like the excitement has been building for all that time. But in the Peter Jackson version, it's too long anyway, but it's just like, God, all of that stuff before they get to the island is boring. So boring. So incredibly boring.
Because in this, like, you feel his presence even before before they even get to the island, because they're always like, they're looking at Denim and they're like, what are you doing? What are we doing? We don't know what's going on. So there's a mystery immediately, like within the first seconds of the movie. It's just like, what are you doing? What are you planning? You're fearless. You're a daredevil. Like, what is this? Why aren't you telling us anything? So there's immediately intrigue and mystery of like, it just gets the ball rolling, really. Like,
yep,
we're on the ship. We're told we're going to a place. We're told the place is a mystery. We don't know what we're going to find there, but by gum, we're going to find it. Like, that's the thing. Then he goes and exploits a homeless woman and then brings her on along for the ride. And then a guy is super sexist to her until he falls in love with her. And then we see the boy. Like, that's it. That's what happens in the first 40 minutes of the movie. Everything except the sexism is kind of in service of seeing the boy. And because of that, it's like, oh, the pacing of it is amazing. And then once he shows up, it is relentless. It is breakneck from the moment he shows up until the credits roll on this thing. It is nonstop. Like, talk about all killer, no filler, and we had just watched The Blob, and man, it's not even a contest that, like, this movie blows The Blob out of the water. Like, it's so much better. The effects are better in every aspect. It's, the pacing is better, the performances are better, like, everything about it is better. It's so well made. It's mind-blowing 91 years later. Like, there's shit in this movie where I'm like, how did you do that 91 years ago? It doesn't make sense. Yes.
No.
Yeah, this is a movie I grew up very familiar with. So it was my second kaiju film love behind Godzilla versus Megalon. So anytime I get to see my boys team up, I know we're on the heels of the new one, which looks bad, but I'm always going to be a little bit interested in it. And it's because of shit like this. Like, I've only seen the Peter Jackson one time. I don't remember anything about it.
Nope.
And
nope.
That movie, according to Wikipedia, is 188 minutes long. And I just don't understand the hubris it takes to look at a film like King Kong and be like, you know what this needs? To be an hour and 17 minutes longer.
Yeah. And they add, from what I've also seen that film, the sum total of one time, but I think about it more than I should for a film that I've seen once and didn't like, because I just think about how so much of the added weight in that film. So okay, like what did you say, 180 something minutes long,
and this is 3 hours 8 minutes long.
Great. And this is what, 100 minutes, like, mm-hmm. in and out.
Yeah, 105, yeah. I think.
Yeah. So, okay, so you're adding on an extra 80 minutes, mm-hmm. let's say, for argument's mm-hmm. sake. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that extra comes from, yeah. in this story. The only thing that's missing from this film is kind of like, how did they get Kong from the island to New York?
I do remember we see in the Peter Jackson movie. Is there's a lot of shit on the boat on the way back, too. What does that add? That adds nothing.
Well, I mean, that would be, I don't know, potentially an extra 10, 15 minutes or so. I'm just thinking like how you would bulk this 1933 version of Kong out to be what we get in that version. But what he adds in that film is so much of the stuff leading up to Kong. That's not what that's not what I want. That's not what we're here for. That's not what we're coming into a monster movie for.
Well, yeah,
really.
Who's watching this movie and going, be a lot cooler if they waited a lot longer to get to Kong? However, what I will say is that it's really funny watching this movie, and we'll talk about the Jaws part for sure. But this was a movie, you know, maybe this is, I've got Party with Marty brain creeping in to mind meld with my LJ fan brain. This is a movie that as I was watching it, I was like, of course Peter Jackson remade this fucking movie. Of course Peter Jackson remade this movie. Because this movie feels like if you were to put a companion film with Fellowship of the Ring, it would absolutely be King Kong. And he straight up steals the shot of Kong looking over the side of the mountain and the guy hiding underneath the thing. Like the Nazgul do that. Like they do that bit. And to the point where every time I go, I do it, I go, oh, it's Lord of the Rings. And it's because it's also, if you think about how groundbreaking this movie was in 1933, Lord of the Rings, like those films pushed filmmaking forward light years. You know, it's like every so often a movie comes around that just pushes the medium forward beyond what you would imagine is capable of accomplishing with filmmaking at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like... Mm-hmm. King Kong is one of those. I would say 2001 is probably one of those. Jaws, less on the technical side, though the shark is great, but like as far as marketing and things like that is one of those. Star Wars is certainly one of those. Jurassic Park is one of those. The Matrix is one of those. Lord of the Rings is absolutely one of those. Mad Max Fury Road is the most recent example I can think of. And it's one of those things where like I don't know if you've ever read Steven Soderbergh's quote about Mad Max Fury Road. He
don't
says
think so.
What?
I don't think I've heard it, no.
Okay. Says, the ability to stage well is a skill and a talent I value above almost everything else, and I say that because there are people who do it better than I'll ever be able to do it after 40 years of active study. I just watched Mad Max Fury Road again last week, and I tell you, I couldn't direct 30 seconds of that movie. I'd put a gun in my mouth. I don't understand how he does that. I really don't. And it's my job to understand how he does that. I don't understand two things. I don't understand how they're not still shooting that film, and I don't understand how hundreds of people aren't dead. Which corrects. And... King Kong, even 91 years later, feels like that type of movie. Like, there is stuff in this movie that I couldn't tell you how they did it. there's bits where they have Kong in an animatronic Kong arm interacting with the real Fay Wray with like a claymation Kong attached to it. And the, like, yeah, of course the stop motion looks stop motion, but the perspective is right. Like, the proportions of Fay Wray to Kong are correct. I don't get it. I don't understand how that works. And, oh, that's the other thing. That's why Peter Jackson did. There's so much forced perspective in this movie, too, that it's like, oh, yeah, of course this is the you know, the blob, as we were saying, to Spielberg, or like even like a Shadows to Scorsese. Like, I could see this being a movie that a kid watches and is just like, I gotta do this. Yeah. Whatever I can do to make that happen, I'm doing that for my job.
Yeah. Let's talk about the effects in this, because my tiny little mind was so blown away by these effects. Yeah. And for something that was made in 1933, I was not expecting that to be the case, because everyone has seen the bit at the end of this film of him like spotting away the planes and everything. And like, it looks good, but it looks like it was made in 1933. Then you see some of the rest of the stuff in this film, and I was reading about the combination of things, even just that shot, you know, when they're approaching and they first see the island and the boat is kind of like, they're just getting off the boat, I think, and coming into the shore.
Yeah.
The matte paintings they used to create that, but they layered it as well. They had a miniature. So the gate was like a miniature, I think. Then the behind that was a matte painting, and it was painted on glass so that you would get the perspective. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Like, this is incredible. And the rear projection stuff as well. And they would switch between something being rear projected and then suddenly like they're physically there. And like, yes, if you're looking really closely, you can probably spot the cut where they kind of then like blend those things together.
Yeah.
But the effect that it creates, this is why I think like it's so important. If you love blockbuster movies now, if you love these big budget special effects movies, you have to go back and watch these films and see how they did it then, because that has shaped how things are now. There is stuff in this, the matte painting and stuff particularly, they use a lot of that in Star Wars to sort of create the vast backgrounds and landscapes and things. The use of miniatures as well, we see that in Star Wars and things much more recent than that as well. Stop motion always has my heart, because it's so tactile. It's just like the idea of someone having to go in and like manipulate these figures, and then how time consuming that process is, how meticulous you have to be to make sure that it looks as good as it does. That fight between Kong and the dinosaur took them 7 weeks to make, which is a vast amount of time for how relatively short that sequence is. But also, like, there's stop motion films or stop motion shorts that sometimes take like years
complete. Mad God, right? Like,
right, yeah, but Phil Tippett's been working on that since like Jurassic the 90s Park? Yeah. or something, right? Yeah, yeah. It's wild. There is obviously there's stuff in this that looks dated. I'm not going to turn around and be like, oh, this looks like it was made yesterday. Looks like it is of a certain age, obviously. But there is such a charm to that, and also just like what was possible even then, and how groundbreaking this must have been. And yes, Kong looks a little funny in some places, but also I freaking love those like close-up shots they do, which was like the puppet, and then all the stop motion stuff is so cool. And they don't just have him like being a, you know, stop motion big gorilla in the background. He is interacting with other characters. He's wild. Picking them up. He is fighting other creatures. All the other creatures in this look so good as well. Like, this, God, that second, the second act of this film is breathlessly exciting. It's so great.
Exhilarating. It's completely, like, it's a movie that every time I watch it, I'm just like, did people in 1933 die when they saw this?
Yeah.
Like, yes. You're talking about audiences that less than two decades prior thought a train was going to run them over out of the screen. Like they were not nearly as savvy about this stuff as we are these days, right? Like this mm-hmm. this had to have been the scariest movie ever made in 1933. Because that like
yeah,
even now that second act is heart pounding. Like it is just it is like Mad Max Fury Road. It is just assaultive. Mm-hmm. It's just one thing after another happening. And mm-hmm. it's one the only other Kong movie that I've seen nail that is Skull Island. That like once shit yeah. pops off in the island, that whole second act is relentless. It is mm-hmm. very similar. I'd never realized how similar Skull Island was structurally to this. It's just that the setup to Skull Island sucks a lot, and the setup to this is like pretty good, minus the racism and sexism.
We'll get to that. Don't worry.
but yeah, the effects are crazy. Like, and even just like, they also don't have Kong just lumbering around. Like, there are moments where you see him like knuckles on the ground, like vault himself over stuff. Like, you can tell they studied actual gorilla movement and tried to approximate it as close as possible in some scenes. Like, so obviously, yeah, some scenes they're going to play fast and lose with it, but it doesn't fucking matter. You know, like, it's so cool that it doesn't matter. And yes, there are moments where he's putting the stop motion, you know, and onto a rock, and you can see the cut where they do it, but it doesn't matter because it's 1933, and it's just like, no, this would have made people shit their pants. Like, this movie is still pretty scary, I think. And in 1933, yeah. I just imagine audiences being like, "What is this?" and you can even see in the stop motion that like they tried to animate wind in his fur a little bit. Like, it's amazing. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh, this movie's so good.
I am now willing to defend the effects in this film in the same passionate way that I defend the shark in Jaws.
Absolutely.
Which is, my first thing is always to point out when it was made. So if you want to come for a film that is like, how many years old?
91 at time of recording.
If you were to come for a film that is 91 years old and be like, the effects don't look very good now, like, just...
Shut up.
Touch grass. Like, just, you know, just think about your choices that you're making before you come out with things like that. Because, obviously, it doesn't look how the Kong movies now look. Mm. That would be insane. But the effect that it creates is still... there. That excitement in that second act is still there. The sadness and the tragedy of the final act, all there. The mystery, the suspense building in the first act, all there. Everything is operating as it should be in this film. The effects, yes, of course, they look like they're made in 1933 because that's when it was made. Do they still look great? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, in the context and in the time period, great. Like, just... I don't know. It's such an easy, like, thing for people to pick at, isn't it? And just be like, oh, the effects look dated. Or, oh, they look, you know, they look this way or they look that way. But I still think that... Because this is not... From what I've seen of Godzilla anyway, that's a lot of, like, a guy in a suit crushing miniature cities, right? So they're doing things in this however many years earlier. That was 54 and this is 33. Mm-hmm. They're doing stuff in this that is using more kind of like technological components, if you will, mm-hmm. than they use in Godzilla. Mm-hmm. It's still effective for what that film is trying to do. And it works better for that film because of just the way Godzilla moves. It's just easier to have. They could have done that stop motion, but like, yeah, whereas this, particularly like the projection stuff, the use of miniatures, the matte painting, the stop motion animation, and combining all of those things mm-hmm. as well mm-hmm. into one. Incredible.
Yep. There's a moment <So good. laughs> where Kong is like lifting this log that a bunch of the dudes are on, and like yeeting them off into this like canyon, and that part's really funny because it's clearly just dummies they threw.
Yeah.
But what's not funny about that is it is a rear projected Kong, and then you could tell they like animated it to where his, you couldn't see his hands, and then they put this log on essentially an actuator that moves it up and down that they had the cast on, and like that's amazing to put two and two together, like the marriage of rear projection and having the rear projection interact with things that are real on the set. Holy shit. Like, it's so cool. It's so cool. And it is like, I think this movie is like the definition of movie magic, even 91 years later. Like, you watch it and you're just like, man, 100%. Movies are so great. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, it quite literally only in the movies can something like this happen. And it's amazing. Like it's one of those things that, especially if you do see it as a kid, like I did, it's one of those things that just like sticks in your brain. Right. Even, I mean, you know, it was like 70 years old by the time I saw it, and maybe 60. Yeah, it was like 60 years old by the time I saw it. But still, this is a 60-year-old movie that just totally captured my heart. I grabbed this off my shelf. I've had this since I was a child, and it's stuck with me my whole life. Like, and there's a reason for that. I've always been a fan of this, you know?
For the listeners, that was a little Kong action figure, which is very cute. Yeah, you're talking about, like, the movie magic of this. I was giddy as a child watching this. It just like, I just felt that excitement. And I want to particularly talk about this, the kind of the structure of this film and bring in Jaws into this as well, because the whole time I was watching, like, particularly the second act, where they are obviously, they're going looking for Kong, they're trying to find him to get Anne back, I'm just like, that's the second half of Jaws, isn't it? Like, the whole, so many similarities. And you can see that, I think, in the first act of the film as well, the sort of the build up to the thing, not seeing it straight away, but effectively building that tension, establishing character so we care about them enough when kind of things start going wrong in the second half. But yeah, that like sense of adventure as they're going looking for this creature, you get that in most other monster movies, but you certainly get it in Jaws, like, heavily. So I saw a lot of that in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's got everything, right? It is a Spielberg grab bag. You've got Indiana Jones, you've got Jurassic Park, you've got The Lost World, you've got Jaws. Like, it's all of them, right? Like, Denham is definitely an Indiana Jones type. To the point where my roommate was like, was this an inspiration on Indiana Jones? And I was like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the one they cite the most, but it had to have been, just as far as the high adventure thing. And then Denham's whole, like, you know, by any means necessary, like, fearless attitude about things. The gates are just the Jurassic Park gates, right? Like,
yes.
Kong's Empire State Adventure is just the end of Jurassic or Lost World, right? Like, that's, I've always loved, I have a big soft spot for the Lost World because of one, the medical van sequence, and two, the Rexy's adventures in San Diego. I think that sequence is very playful and fun. But it's clearly like a way for him to do King Kong shit. Like, that's the only reason that's in the movie, I think. And I would say it might be the only reason Spielberg agreed to make that movie is because he got like, to unleash a T-Rex in San Diego. Yeah. And then Jaws is just like the mystery of like what is happening. There's, you know, there's people disappearing from this tribe. Like, why is that happening? We don't really have evidence to it. And then, yeah, the big chase near the end, it feels like every time they have to chase down the shark with and put barrels in it, you know, it's very exciting. And also, if you ever wanted to know where Williams got the idea for the score for the second half of this movie, it is all over this fucker. Like, it is this Max Steiner score is, one, incredible. It's amazing.
It's so good.
But it's clearly an influence on John Williams' work in Jaws in particular.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot of Jaws and a lot of Jurassic Park as well, which I think is just normal for a film like this. But yeah, the score in this is incredible. I am a big fan of just listening to film scores anyway, and the sign of like a good film score is one that I'm like, I could see myself putting this on and listening to, like, thrown on in the background while I work or something, and like, I'm like, yep, this is one of those. It's great. And it was just, there was something very familiar about it as well, even though I had not seen this film. And I think that's probably because it's been so influential, particularly in John Williams, John Williams' scores.
Well, I mean, it's Max Steiner, right? Like, he's just, it's like Max Steiner, friggin' Bernard Herrmann, John Williams. Those are the three, like, you know, all-time great composers. I mean, I guess some people would say Hans Zimmer and... Who's the dude that did Lord of the Rings? James Newton Howard?
Howard Shore was Lord
Howard
of the Rings.
Howard Shore was Lord of the Rings, yeah. but like those are like Max Steiner, Bernard Herrmann, and John Williams are like the holy trinity of film scoring, right? Like, you know, you think about what Steiner did. He did Gone with the Wind. He did King Kong. He did Casablanca. He did Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't.
Oh, it's so good. And his score is amazing. His score for that movie. That's one of my favorite film scores of all time. I love the score to that movie. So anytime, like, as much as I love the work Bernard Herrmann did with Hitchcock, like, of those early guys, Max Steiner is my boy. I love his scores so much.
Yeah, so many of these kind of, like, this era, like 30s, 40s, kind of just like classic Hollywood. I love so many of those scores. I love the score of Casablanca. This is great. Like, there's just something about it that kind of like timeless quality to it, and no wonder they're so influential for future composers, because if you're going to be influenced by anyone, like, be influenced by the best, right? And this is absolutely one of the best.
I don't know if your copy came with the overture or not, which might be what they cut to
potentially
make yours an hour 35 or something. But we sat through the whole thing, and because I like, if I have a movie on DVD with an overture, I try to let the overture play. I'll skip through an intermission if I have a DVD that has an intermission, but I let an overture play. I think that's nice, if not just for last minute snack grabbing. But it was really nice to have the overture and then hear it, you know, in the rest of the film. More movies need to do that. What was the last movie that did? Was it The Hateful Eight? Was the last movie I saw with an overture?
Probably. That's the last one I can remember. Yeah. But yeah, that feels like such like a classic thing, doesn't it? It's just like the swell of the music as you're just kind of like building up to what you're about to watch. It's just that sense of excitement as well. I'm gonna check if, because I, again, sign of how much I loved this film, as soon as it finished I wanted to watch it immediately again. But now, having just learned that it is available free to stream, because we're in the process of upgrading the DVD that we have to a Blu-ray copy, I want to throw it on again and see if that's the version that's got the overture in it, because I want to watch it.
So that leads me to this question. Great movie. Great, great movie. So great it makes up for the real tough stuff in it.
Woof. Yeah. We gotta address the proverbial elephant in the room. I feel there's some particularly difficult misogyny was a bit of a bitter pill to swallow at the beginning of this film. It's not a film that is particularly kind to its female character, singular. But yikes, yeah, there's some stuff in this. And yeah, depictions of the natives as well. Yeah, there's some stuff going on.
yeah, it's tough, right? Because it's like, movie is great. It's a real good movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think it's one of those things where it's like, you can watch a movie that's of a time and not forgive. I'm not saying that's necessarily the case. Like that is still not an attitude someone should have had in 1933. But
no.
You can watch it and be like, well, people were a lot worse. or just like, yeah, it's hard. It's not hard to recommend the movie because the effects are so good. And I don't think that detracts from it, despite how dicey some of the other shit in this movie is.
Yeah.
Which it is, don't get me wrong. But it's like, I think part of it is that the human characters really don't matter in this movie. And so whatever they're doing, like once Kong shows up, whatever they were doing before just so doesn't matter. Like it doesn't make up for it. It doesn't forgive it. It doesn't excuse it, but it's just like, like that guy was pretty sexist, but I also don't give two shits about him, even if he wasn't super sexist. So
yeah,
I think that goes a long way of you just being like, yeah, these people are here to get me to Kong. Like, they are merely the vessel that gets me to my tragic large son. They are not the end all be all point of the film. Like, Kong is the point of the film. So I'm not saying it gets away with it, but it's easy to move past. It's easier to move past that than something like, well, this is an extreme example, but I would say then something like Birth of a Nation, right? Which, like, the racism is the point of that movie. And
yeah,
the sexism is not the point of this movie. It's just something in there to give these dipshit characters something to move them forward through the movie. And it's also so goofy in some parts, like, that it's just like, come on, guys. What are we doing here?
Yeah, very much so. And there's no way that what I'm about to say was what they were intending at the time. I really don't think that's the case anyway. But with this film being one that does kind of leave you with that question of who is the real monster at the end of this, the human characters being kind of shitty helps to sell that point a little bit, at least now with, you know, we're a lot more cine literate now watching these films. It's just like, okay, yeah, we come out of this feeling sorry for Kong, and the film does want you to feel that way as well. It is tragic what ends up happening to him, and is that classic, you know, the moral of the story is like, don't go into this guy's house and try and, like, strap him on a boat and take him to somewhere that is not where he lives. Like, that's not fair. It's cruel.
It's an allegory for really slavery.
All of those things. Yeah, they really only have themselves to blame for then when it kind of all goes awry. You know, like Jurassic Park, like Jaws, like Frankenstein, like so many other monster movies, when it is man meddling in nature, things they... perhaps, yeah, should not be meddling in, and then it all inevitably goes tits up. We're not then, most of the times anyway, not kind of being like, oh, the monster is still bad and we should be cheering for these people because we want bad things to happen to the monster. Certainly not the case in this. But yeah, with the, it does, that's not, I think that's just, it was the 30s when they made this, and unfortunately those things were just, those attitudes were just a little more commonplace then. Not okay then, not okay now, but it was, it's just one of the, it's I hate to say like of its time, but it is, but with with modern eyes on it, you can kind of go, okay, yeah, these are bad people.
Yeah.
In many ways,
yeah.
Whether they were intended to be portrayed in that way or not, or whether that was just, these are people from the 30s and this is how they talk and act. But by the end, we're like, yes, they are bad people. They shouldn't have done this thing. Perhaps people are the real monsters after all. So that, for me anyway, made that like slightly easier to swallow.
Yeah.
Still tricky, but easier. And I think if you are like you said, a film I can still recommend, will recommend this 1,000 times over. I think it's such an important film for people to watch if you love cinema, particularly, as I was saying, if you love the like big blockbuster special effects. If you're planning on going to see in the new Godzilla Kong, like, and you haven't seen this, you got to watch this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just important to watch, but with the caveat, as I think we did on our last episode when we mentioned it, the caveat that there is some tricky stuff, particularly in the beginning, and you just need to be aware of that going into it, because it there are certain people who would just kind of immediately switch off from this at the start, and I don't think that's that. Yeah, some things you just have to stick it out because the end result is worth it.
Yeah, yeah, and this is absolutely one of them. I think the other thing too is it's so over the top in 2024 that it's easy to laugh at. It's so easy to laugh at it. In this, so it's like, I don't want to say it's harmless. It's not, like, you know, sexism is never harmless, but like in 2024 it's borderline harmless, where like they say it and it's so like bold and blatant and over the top that you're just like, okay, that's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know, like the the scene when the guy is like, I think I love you, and she's like, but you hate women, and he's like, yeah, but you're not women. What? Fucking what?
Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. I don't think that made sense then, and it certainly doesn't make sense now.
It is an Anchorman level of sexism that this man portrays. Like, it is so... like, he is... this man is 2 seconds away from saying the bears can smell the menstruation. Like, it...
it so true. the Kong couldn't smell the menstruation.
Yeah. Yeah, it like, it's just, it's so, it is really funny in 2024, some of the shit that this guy says, where it's just like, well, what? Like, I think I was thinking about Anchorman while I was watching it two nights ago, where it's just like, this is a comical amount of sexism for a character, even for 1933, I feel like. It's just like the fiction I wrote in my head is that he is a deeply closeted gay man and he's taking his frustrations out on women. That's my headcanon is that's what's going on.
Yeah. If they did end up at like pursuing this relationship, God, that would not have been a healthy or a good relationship.
They got married the day after Kong died.
Does that happen in this?
No, but he, Denham has that line that they're set to be married tomorrow.
Wow. Dang. They move quick.
Yeah.
Nothing gets you in the mood for marriage like a big monkey falling off a building.
Yep. No, he says, because it's before all that happens, it's when he reveals Kong to the audience. He's like, these are the people who will capture him, they're set to be married tomorrow. So it's in the theater when he says that. I guess I don't know that the marriage is still gonna happen. But
woof.
Yeah. Which is really funny because the first thing he does to her is hit her right in the face.
Yeah. It does also kind of feel like that's just I potentially could have done without that element of this, so
yeah,
it doesn't in any way take away from my enjoyment from this, but it's like if I could trade the kind of like vague attempt at a romantic subplot with Kong fighting another large creature, we all know what I'm gonna take.
Yeah,
like every time.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that Brontosaurus boy though?
Is that the one in the
water?
Is that the one in the water? Mm. Yeah,
so good. Yeah. So good. Also,
I loved it.
When he pops up out of the water, I was like, holy shit, Apocalypse Now. It's Brando coming out of the water in Apocalypse Now.
You're 1,000% correct.
Yeah, it's the exact same shot. I was like, I cannot believe that Coppola did a King Kong with Brando. That's hilarious.
Apart from like the obvious and how many other Kong movies they made mm-hmm. after this and the ones we've already mentioned, I would love to kind of see the list of films where it's just like that all took something from this, because I bet that list is huge.
I bet it's all of them. Just like it's
yeah, every movie made after this. Yeah. And it's like we spoke a lot on our Frankenstein episode about how that film kind of created the template for a monster movie. Mm. And it did, and I still agree with that. They're already kind of discovering in this monster movie season that there's the monster movies that lean more horror, and that's Frankenstein, and then there's like creature features or ones like this, the kaiju movies basically, that they are kind of doing similar but different things. Right. I mean, there's a lot of crossover between them in terms of man meddling things that he shouldn't be, who's the real monster. Like, we have both of those things in both of these films, but the influence of Frankenstein you would be able to see on kind of other horror monster movies, and King Kong kind of like goes off in like a, they're under the same umbrella
sure.
of monster movies, but like, yeah, two different
strands. It's kind of tough. I actually think that we're going to have a lot more thoughts about King Kong after we watch Godzilla. Because yes, they have teamed up and fought each other or whatever over the course, because like obviously that would be the default position even probably in 1954, is like, what if Godzilla fought King Kong? Like, it's a no-brainer, right? Like, as much as kids have been doing
two large boys fight.
Exactly. But I've been kind of holding off on talking about Godzilla on this episode because we're getting ready to talk about it very soon, and also I could talk about Godzilla forever, but Ishiro Honda made Godzilla to be Japanese King Kong. Like, it was directly sure. because of King Kong that he had the idea for Godzilla. Like, mm-hmm. he wanted to make, and his intent originally was to make Godzilla stop motion. Like, he wanted it to be the Japanese King Kong. Start to, like, that was the entire inception, was the nuclear test that was in the headlines when he got the inspiration, plus King Kong. That was sort of the idea. So yeah, they are, you know, I know it's easy, especially because there have been so many films that they've shown up in together, to be like, oh yeah, but no, they are intrinsically in their inception linked to each other. And it's easy to see why. Like, this is a movie that it's just one of those things that like I said, it comes out and it just pushes what the medium can do, not just beyond what it was capable of at the time, but I mean, this is a movie that feels like it was 20, 30 years ahead of its time. Like, it's crazy that this came out in 1933. This feels like a movie that shouldn't have come out for another 10, 20 years, at least. And of course you're going to get people being like, all right, how the fuck did they do that? And then having to reverse engineer this movie. And it's not like, you know, it's not as well documented as something like Lord of the Rings, whereas, like, I legit think that if you are a kid who's interested in filmmaking, you could watch all the appendices of the Lord of the Rings extended version DVDs and have a pretty good grasp as to the, like, bird's eye view of the filmmaking process, right? You couldn't necessarily go out and make your own movie in the same way, but you could probably get a pretty good start to at least get a camera in your hand and something shot with and edited and out on YouTube with your friends that's probably gonna look okay. They didn't have that. Like, there weren't any DVD special features. You know, you had to get crew who worked on it and people who figured it out and iterate on that and build it up. And yeah, it's just one of those movies that it comes out and everyone is just like, all right, we got to do that. You know, everyone's doing that with Mad Max Fury Road right now. We're still remaking Mad Max Fury Road. We're still remaking Guardians of the Galaxy. Did you see the Borderlands trailer? Yeah. It just looks like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Meets Fury Road. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. We've just been remaking those movies for 10 years now. Like, that's it. Those are the only two movies that exist in Hollywood's brain. And it's been, has it been 10 years for Fury Road as well?
God, it has to have been, yeah. Right? What year did that come out?
2015, maybe? Close.
Gonna get there first. 2015.
Yeah.
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 Good Lord, I'm old.
Yeah.
I'll be 10 years old next year.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Yikes.
It's got to be one of those movies where every monster movie after felt like King Kong. But it's also wild because... You did have the Universal Monster movies, which were less than... I mean, Creature from the Black Lagoon has some King Kong in it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be... obviously, like, when we're plotting out the seasons and what order we're going to watch things in, we usually go in order of when they came... of release year order.
Mm-hmm.
But what a great pair to start with, because I just have a feeling that every movie we're gonna watch after this, we're either gonna mention Frankenstein or King Kong, or maybe both, because we've got the Godzilla is our next, and that's 54, so there's a big enough or a large enough amount of time between that, and Creature from the Black Lagoon was the same year, actually, 54.
Mm-hmm.
That they potentially will have figured out how they did some of the stuff in these two films and then be like, cool, okay, so now we will just continue to do that. But what's great, and is I don't know if you necessarily see the same thing now, is just when things were advancing as rapidly as they did sort of way back when, like from this to, you know, films of the 50s and 60s, you can sort of see... each time just kind of like bettering it, and you can see, oh, okay, so they took that from this film, they figured something out to make it better, and then they did that in the next one. Things like, at least for a while, have kind of like plateaued, and there's a lot of films, as we said, coming out now that are just kind of like doing the Fury Road thing, trying to do the Guardians of the Galaxy thing, trying endlessly to recreate the sort of early magic of the MCU, and just pumping out those films like they're going out of fashion. But until there is that next, like, truly innovative film, it's not going to feel like things have progressed to the next step, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And this is what you were saying right at the top as well, that there are these certain like benchmarks in cinema where it's just like, this was one of the innovators. This was one of the ones that did something that people hadn't seen before, mm-hmm. or at least brought together a bunch of techniques that people hadn't seen in the same place before, and was just like, have fun trying to do that.
Yeah.
Like, well, recreate that same thing for the next 20 or 30 years until we get the next, like, big innovative film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you see it on a small scale. Look at how many just pure action movies these days are just fucking John Wick.
Yeah.
Every action movie is a John Wick ripoff. They're all just John Wick ripoffs. There's the new Dev Patel movie that's coming out. I don't know if you saw the trailer for it. It's called Monkey Man. Dev Patel stars in it, and he directed it. It's just John Wick. It's just John Wick. I was watching it, and I was like, what is the difference between this and John Wick? Like, to the point where...
What was that... that Bob Odenkirk film as
Nobody?
Well? That was
just
John Wick, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
Atomic Blonde. A movie I turned off because it sucks.
Oh, it's very bad.
It's not good.
It's very bad.
Yeah, that's because David Lynch can't direct his way out of a fucking paper box. That guy sucks. I hate that dude. And he was the uncredited co-director of John Wick 1.
I was like, I can do that again with a lady.
Yes, exactly.
And nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, but absolutely. Just make it good.
Yeah, that's all you gotta do.
Yep, just gotta make it good. Yeah, every action movie is John Wick. Before that, every action movie was The Matrix. You know, like, it was every action movie before that, or adventure movie before that, was Jurassic Park. You know, it just, it's those movies that just push things forward and make audiences not give a shit about anything else. Or not even audiences, but studios. Like, studios are like, let's just do what worked. I would say even, I mean, let's face it. Even by the time we get to the MCU and Guardians of the Galaxy, everything's still just Star Wars. Everything's still just Star Wars. And, like, Lord of the Rings is the only one I can think of that was so just bug nuts, balls to the wall ambitious that no one really tried to repeat, aside from the fact that we started adapting every fantasy sci-fi book under the sun, but none of them really tried to do what Lord of the Rings did with it, you know,
not in sense of the scale of it as well,
exactly.
Just like shooting those things like back to back and kind of interchangeably, and just the how much stuff in that film was on location and practical effects and people in makeup and costume rather than tons of CGI. I mean, there is CGI in that film, but where you notice the difference between the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films is the Hobbit films are so much less. There is a physical person in like a
makeup
or a suit made up to look like an orc or an uruk-hai or whatever. They're CGI creations, and they look like CGI creations, and there just wasn't that same like heart and passion. I mean, I will always like blow the trumpet for practical effects over CGI. I mean, obviously CGI, like, it has its place. There are things that are just not possible to do with practical effects, and that's fine. But that sense that something is like tactile and real, and you can touch it, and it's there to interact with as well, that, going back to Kong, that must have made a huge difference in this. Even just like the kind of, when it's just like his arm or whatever and it's gripping her, just having something there to interact with, would, that's gotta be more effective for an actor than like, I don't know, they're rigged up in some green screen thing with like a, I don't know, a crane yeeting them around a massive studio or something. It's just like having something that is like actually there that you can sort of interact with is just like, I just think there's something that's so special about that. It's why we love Jaws so much, because you can physically see this big old thing moving through the water. It's there. It's, as we see the people, we see the shark. There is like, they are both there at the same time. And that's great. That just makes it feel more real.
To use
really basic terms, but it's just, that will always have more of an impact on me than sort of something that is completely made by a computer. That's not to say there's not skill in it. There is incredible amount of skill in special effects and bringing the impossible to life with the technology that we have now. But there's just something extra special about when you know that that thing was actually there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it, the only time I think I've seen CGI really justify itself as the main thing are those recent Apes movies.
Literally what I was about to say, yep.
And the thing is, those movies need to be way more influential than they were, because they're great. And
yeah,
it, like, I feel like they had no impact whatsoever, which sucks, because they're all three of them are good. And the effects are incredible. They're amazing. They are the case for pure CGI. Like,
yeah,
there's not a single frame of those movies where the apes aren't CGI, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It does not matter. They're the only ones that have done it. And, you know, I've also my high horse about that movie is that they're also big budget blockbuster movies that are just stone cold bummers. And
man, those films are depressing. Particularly the last one.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
Oof.
Yep.
I was depressed when I watched that film.
I'm a dipshit, and when that movie came out, went to a marathon of all three of them back to back to back.
So did I.
And I need to revisit the third one because I didn't like it very much because I was so bummed out by the time that I got to that one. And that one's the saddest of all of them.
I did the exact same thing and I had the exact same reaction, and every single person I talk to about those movies is like, the third one is the best one. And I'm like, I've watched it once. I watched it when I saw it as part of that triple bill with the other two, and I had enjoyed it, appreciate it, because like the scale of the thing, it looks incredible. Some really great stuff in there. Incredibly depressing. But I don't think I really appreciated it and took it in because it's so different in tone
and bleak
from the others. And also, it, like, you call it War for the Planet of the Apes, so you're expecting, like, people v. monkeys, chaos is what you're expecting. And it so isn't that.
It's an ideological war. Like,
yeah, it's so introspective, and it's just the sort of film that Sarah's and MJ's really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I know that if we both rewatched it, we would probably love it, and it would be, like, we would love it more than any of the others. But yeah, that trilogy of films, people do talk about. Are they making another one?
Are.
I don't know.
Yeah,
prequel or something, is it? Or
no, I think it's after War for the Planet of the Apes. I think it's like, it's a prequel to Planet of the Apes. I think this is the I think this is the one that like bridges the gap finally between but Matt Reeves isn't directing it.
Yeah, and
I mean, he didn't direct the first one, and it's still pretty good. So,
it's like Toy Story as well. That was a perfect end to what should have been a perfect trilogy, and they should have left it there. And I kind of think the same with the Apes films, because I think even though I absolutely do need to revisit the last one, so many people talk about them as being like a perfect trilogy of films. Like, and it's rare to get that. So even though people do talk about it in that sort of high regard, it's so interesting that what we've spoken about on this episode of there being those sort of moments where it's like, those are the films that are going to influence everything that comes after. I kind of feel like those like potentially could fit into that, but they just didn't seem to have that impact because there were so many other things coming out at the time that were like big CGI fests. And it's just like, okay, but you watch how it's done in those films and how well it's done. And then you watch how it's done in, like, I don't like the Favreau Jungle Book or Lion Kings that much, in terms of the kind of like, oh, like really like photorealism kind of things, like that those films aren't good. Those are not the argument for all CGI, because I just don't think they look very good. Whereas the Apes films, absolutely. They're great.
They're really good. All three of them are really good. I really like that second movie a lot, the one with Gary Oldman. Oh, it's so good.
I think that's my current favorite.
Same.
That I can remember anyway, because I that whole trilogy is due a rewatch. I gotta get on that.
Yeah, I do too. But also, like, I think Matt Reeves is the only guy, and we're gonna talk about a Matt Reeves movie in the last episode of this. We're talking about Cloverfield, and he is the only guy who gets that, like, the origins of both Cloverfield and the Apes movies has got to be King Kong, right?
Very much, yeah.
He's the only one who gets that it's a bummer, because he's the only one out here making big budget bummers. And I don't think Matt Reeves has made a single bad film in his career. And it's because they're kind of bummers. I really like his Batman movie because it's not super happy. Like, the movie is kind of sad. Like, it ends on a mildly hopeful note, but it's kind of a bummer, and it's bleak as shit up until that ending. And
it's so long.
It is very long. It is very long, but I really liked it. I also just love Batman, so...
Sure, yeah. Fair.
Like, his Let the Right One In remake is a little unnecessary. I don't know why I would watch it over the original, but it has my favorite shot in all of cinema in it, and also, it's a bummer. Both those Apes movies, stone cold bummers. Cloverfield, spoilers, literally nobody survives the end of that movie. Like, you know, and this too, this has a bummer ending. Like, yeah, all the human characters are there, but like, what did that large man do to deserve that? Nothing. Kong innocent. Nothing. That's what I say.
Yes. 100%. And like, the same in Frankenstein as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they end it on a slight, like a weird little comedic button, but sure. Like, prior to that, real tragic. Mm-hmm. And by that point, we are like, no, monster is innocent in this case also. So like, it's slightly more complicated in that than it is in this, because it does kind of intentionally or not kill people. Mm-hmm. But it's there's something so interesting about ending these films that are monster movies that are about this kind of like incredibly big, incredibly powerful creature in whatever form that takes, and yet there is like real, genuine, bleak and sad human emotion at the center of that. And that's something that is so interesting to me. I feel like all the best monster movies end with kind of a Jaws doesn't exactly end that happily,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We like Quid dies. Yeah. And then like, yes, it ends on a great one-liner, and yes, two of the three survive, but it still is like a bummer ending. Mm-hmm. Brody isn't even that, like, he's happy when the shark is dead, but it's just like, this man is traumatized by what he's by what he's been through, and that wonderful brief interaction between Brody and Hooper where they just ask if, you know, where he asks if Quint is there, and he just says no.
Yeah.
Real bummer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I mean, Close Encounters has a bummer ending.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
How many of the ones you've seen more on this list than I have? It changes. The monster movies change a bit when we get into the 80s. I mean, The Thing.
Yeah, the thing is the ultimate bummer horror ending, right?
Yeah.
Creature, I don't think has a bummer ending, but I've only seen it once. American Werewolf in London is a comedy, so the mummy's not a bummer ending. The Host is a bummer, kind of, and Cloverfield's a bummer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm looking at our Patreon ones as well. Yeah, I mean, there's an element of it. A lot of them sort of like try to at least like send you out of the theater on like a small high note at the end, but then there's also loads that are just like, this monster's dead now and it was because of your terrible humans. How'd you feel about that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I cannot wait. Have you, is Godzilla 1954 a first time watch for you? Is it going to be a first time watch for you? Oh man.
Yeah.
I am so gonna excited. Do you know what happens in that movie?
Barely.
Okay, then yeah, talk about a fucking bummer ending. Holy shit.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. I have not seen as many Godzilla films as I should have done, considering I'm talking to a Mr. Godzilla and yourself.
Mr. Godzilla.
My favorite is Godzilla Minus One because it's the best one I've seen.
I think that opinion won't necessarily change, but also it's so similar to Godzilla that, you know, it's tough. But one of the things I go to bat for the 2014 Godzilla, despite there not being enough Godzilla in it, despite the human shit being way less interesting than it is in the 1954 one. But it kind of does nail the sort of tragic nature of Godzilla. And I'll appreciate that. Like, the movie doesn't end happy either, right? It's not necessarily a bummer the way these other ones are, but it's not like, hooray! It's just like, oh, the world's a lot different now. Yeah. And that's something that the rest of those MonsterVerse movies just didn't lean into, which sucks. You know, I once again go to bat for Godzilla vs. Kong because it's got my two large sons in it. But that's kind of like, I'm always going to be a little excited to see them, right? And it's yeah, no matter how bad those movies get, it's just like, yeah, but it's my large boys. Like, I just want to hug them.
I am, by the way, for the new one that's coming out, I am solely relying on you to tell me if it is worth me spending my hard-earned money to go and see it.
Oh, probably not. I would say right now, probably not. But I'm gonna do it anyway.
I need to know. Yeah. Obviously, you are gonna go and see it.
Yeah.
But like, just let me know. Is it worth me parting with some money to go and see it?
Yeah. Based on the trailers, no. But
yeah. Why has he got he's got like a weird arm.
I don't care, I'm in. I just like, that's, it's so ridiculous. It like, there were people who were like, why is Godzilla running? He's a lizard. He shouldn't be running. And my brain just goes, my boy go zoom. Like, it's so just primitive brain in there when it comes to Kong and Godzilla. Where it's like, yeah, as long as they get some screen time doing cool shit, I'm gonna forgive a lot of stuff I really shouldn't.
Yeah, because a lot of those movies are, hate to break it to you, quite bad.
Yeah.
Like the Godzilla and Kong stuff, great. Yeah. I think Skull Island has got some of like the best kind of like monstery stuff in it, in that bit where like it all starts kicking off.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Yep.
And the same with a lot of I think I've seen Godzilla vs. Kong. I've seen Godzilla King of the Monsters as well. I couldn't tell you anything about it, but I do remember there being like big moments of action that were exciting to watch, but do I remember anything else about them? No.
I love that movie because it takes my two favorite things, Godzilla and religion, and is like, Godzilla is lizard Jesus.
Incredible. Well, like, if I watch it with that lens, maybe I'll like it more. I don't know.
Because there's a scene where Rodan shows up, and it's like, not Rodan, Ghidorah. Ghidorah shows up, and he's like on top of a mountain that's like shooting lava, and there's a cross, like right dead center foreground. But you can see the cross better than you can see Ghidorah. And it's like the false king emerges. Like, I was just like, hell yeah, Ghidorah as Lucifer, let's go. Like, what a stupid angle for a movie about giant lizards fighting. That's so dumb. Let's do it. Like, why is this a Christian movie? Like,
if there is a way to make a movie your favorite movie, that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It.
Religious shit. Large boys fight.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, I love that movie. That's my favorite MonsterVerse movie. Because it's so goofy. Like, why is there religious shit in that movie?
I don't know.
That is a movie that ends with Godzilla standing in dead center in front of all the other monsters, and they literally bow down and worship him because he is lizard Jesus. Like, it is so funny.
Why is this making me want to rewatch
it? It's great. I really legit enjoy that movie. I think it's a good movie.
I don't know.
I will go to bat for that movie so hard. I think it's so fun, but it's also so dumb that they chose that angle.
Lizard Jesus.
He's Lizard Jesus. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It just don't know, because they don't do anything with it. It's just there. It's not explored. It's just like, this is what's happening.
I think it's a special treat just for you.
I think so.
That's my theory.
I think so. The idea of, because then it's implied that Ghidorah is an alien. So the idea of him being like a fallen angel from some other planet is real funny. Like, come on, guys. What are we doing? This is a lot even for me. Like,
stupid.
Yeah, this movie is real dumb. Movie is dumb as a bag of hammers, but I like it.
I've heard good things about Shin Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, you should watch Shin Godzilla. If you like Godzilla Minus One, you should absolutely watch Shin Godzilla. That movie is... you know how Godzilla Minus One is about how, like, what if there was a Godzilla movie and the human characters you actually gave a shit about? This one is, what if you didn't give a shit about the human characters and that was the point? It's really interesting. It's really interesting. It's also got really gross Godzilla, and I love him.
Ooh.
He's really gross.
Okay, I'm in.
He's real gross in this one. Yeah, you should watch Shin Godzilla. Also a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Massive bummer ending.
Great.
Yep.
Sold.
Maybe the bummeriest Godzilla movie besides the first one.
I'm gonna love Godzilla 54, aren't I?
Yeah.
I just got a feeling.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. He's great. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. So good. Which is what we're watching next. That you guys should, if you watch it, make sure it's the Japanese cut, not the American cut.
Yes, important. I will say now, I'll say it again on next week's episode, very hard to get in the UK. Mm-hmm. I've managed to find an old, now out of print DVD copy on eBay, which I will be buying once we finish this recording, because it's nowhere otherwise. Weirdly, really difficult to get hold of, which it's unfortunate that a lot of these like classic films, at least over here, it seems, are pretty difficult to get hold of.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, King Kong currently free to watch, which is incredible news, and everyone should go and watch it. So
yeah, I mean,
because it's great.
Yeah, Godzilla 54 is. Just watch isn't loaded, but it's on Max here in the States. You can just stream it.
This is what we're missing. It seems like so many things are on that used to be HBO Max, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's just Max.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of good stuff on there. We just don't get that.
Yeah, it's on.
Which is annoying.
It's on Max. It's on Roku with ads, it's on the Criterion Channel, and it's on something called Fubo, and then you can rent it on Apple and Amazon. Like, it's very readily available on any of the popular platforms.
Yeah. I'm just checking again, just in case they have updated anything on Just Watch, but no, it is not available to stream or rent anywhere. Fantastic. Well, if you are able to watch that, that's next week's one. Did you have anything else to add on King Kong? I mean,
it's great. It's great. It's great, and you should watch it. It's, yeah, I love my large tragic son.
Real good. Mm-hmm. Real good. And indicative, I think, of like how many people have seen this and loved it as well. We've had some tweets this week. I'm so excited. Actually quite a lot as well. I'm gonna read most of them, if not all of them, because they're all great. At Androx 66 has a reminder, in 9 years this will be 100 years old. This film is the benchmark, and I watch it a few times a year. Absolutely, this film is the benchmark for all monster movies that followed, as we mentioned. At Hood CP, one of the first films I saw that taught me how shitty humans are. Very much so, could not agree more with that. At M_Nick89, Nicky Sweatpants himself, I've only seen it
Johnny
once, but
bits.
It's pretty groundbreaking for its time, and was was a fun movie to watch. Nick, you gotta rewatch it. Hopefully this episode makes you want to rewatch it. At S. Barraclough, I once saw the legendary Ray Harryhausen introduce this ridiculously iconic masterpiece at the BFI in London. It inspired his later work in cinema.
Clearly.
He was the... He worked with the guy who did the effects on this, I think. Willis H. O'Brien. Mm-hmm. I think Ray, he was like mentor to Harryhausen is what I was reading.
Makes sense.
But yeah, you can see a lot of a lot of that in Harryhausen's work,
yep,
for sure. At J. Ramji, magnificent. My mind would have been blown if I'd seen this in 1933. My equivalent memory is Superman in 78 and Jurassic Park in 93. Mm. Yeah, I want to know what people thought when they saw this film in the 30s.
Yeah,
wild. This is someone who gets us. At Dymo Dammit, first movie I ever saw that made me cry at the end. Yes.
Yep.
It's a real bummer.
Yep.
A real bummer. I didn't cry, mostly because it was quite late when I finished watching it and I was sleepies. But it's, yeah, woof. It's a real bummer.
Yeah. Well, I think we didn't touch on this, but this is a good place to do it. Have you ever seen a gorilla in real life?
Mm-hmm.
They're fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
They're scary because you look at a gorilla and there's shit going on in the dome. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm,
most cats I look at and they're just no thoughts, just vibes. But like, you look at any ape or primate and it's just like, nah, there's gears turning in there and I don't like that. I don't like that one mm-hmm bit, you know?
Yeah. They're so smart, and also gorillas, a lot of them anyway, are just like pure muscle.
Yeah.
Like when you see the big like silverback gorillas, mm-hmm, I'm like, that would win in any mm-hmm fight. I mean, as we have discussed in the Kong versus Godzilla, that's a no-brainer. It's Godzilla.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah, but
here?
Godzilla has a heat ray, so
yes.
Kind of an unfair
advantage.
Pure brawn.
Yeah.
Pure brawn, it's Kong. But
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That also rhymed. Very nice.
Yeah. Hell yeah. But yeah, it's just like they're so smart and so strong. They're just so scary to look at. Like, you see, mm-hmm, you make eye contact with one and you're like, that thing can understand me. You know what I mean? Like, you can, I don't like an animal that I can connect with. That makes me uncomfortable. An animal that I can make eye contact with and they're like, I understand your whole deal. Mm-mm. No, I don't like that.
Mm.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah. That's a lot. Yeah.
Orangutans? Ooh, some way.
Anyway.
Yeah. A chimp? Also, a chimp will fuck you up. That's the other thing, too. Mm-hmm. Like a gorilla will, too, but a chimp will, like, fuck you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's scrappy.
Yeah. And strong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, much to ponder next time mm-hmm you go to the zoo.
Yep.
thank you to everyone who sent tweets in. We always love hearing from you guys. And yeah, I am being much better at putting those tweets out nice and early so that we actually get some responses in. So thank you to everyone who sent those in. And a special thank you as well to our patrons. If you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/jawsforaminute. We've, at the time this episode goes out anyway, one episode, bonus episode is out where we talked about 1958's The Blob. Spoiler, not as good as King Kong. But we still had a very interesting discussion about that. Plus, you get access to all of the other bonus episodes from previous seasons and any new ones that we bring out as well. $3 or £3 a month, I think, gets you into that. We've got our Jaws commentary on there as well. A full-length audio commentary for Jaws was, I think, the first Patreon episode that we did. We do Q&As, all sorts of fun stuff going on over there. So, yeah, if you want to get involved, head to patreon.com/jawsforaminute, and that's where you can find all of our bonus content. And you will also earn a shout out on the show, like these fine people. So thank you to Tim, Eric, Blake, Andrew, Rachel, Katie, Mike, Callum, Cameron, Jack, Chris, and Uncut Gems Podcast.
Yes. And yeah, your efforts on the Patreon help us pay for this whole shindig with the little mm-hmm overhead we have, but also are able to do things like give us a second podcast. Sarah and I have another podcast called Let's Party with Marty, where we are going through the list of companion films that Martin Scorsese put on Letterboxd, as well as the actual films themselves. This week's episode, or the most recent episode by the time you're hearing this, is about the Scorsese short documentary about his parents called Italian American. We had guest Jason Bailey on to talk about it, and it is great, if I do say so myself. I think it might be our best episode to date of that show.
I agree.
Yeah, it's real good.
It's real good.
So
not to toot our own horn, but you know,
beep. Yeah. Go check that out. If you like what you heard, go check it out at the same. It's on all the podcast platforms. If you're listening to this, you can find it on the same app that's on. Yep. If you want to follow us on the socials, we are on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky under @JawsForAMinute. Blue Sky is no longer invite only, so you can sign up there if you want.
Free for all.
What's that?
It's a free for all now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yep. And on those socials, you will find a link tree, which has a link to our Patreon, as well as a link to buy merch at TeePublic. We have merch for both shows on there. Shout out to Alex, our wonderful, graphic designer friend who, designed our logos for us. You can find us individually on Twitter at Sarah Buttery, SarahBudderY, and at MJSmith891. If you would like to contact us another way, if you're not on the social medias or anything like that, you can drop us an email at jawsforaminute@gmail.com. We will be back in 2 weeks to talk about Godzilla 1954. Until next time, it is Jaws O'Clock somewhere.